I just got really comfortable right away with no and getting rejected and getting denied and asking again and asking again until I make it happen. Because, I mean, we get things by asking.
Welcome to the Artist Development Podcast, where we explore the human experience within the music business. In episode 2, we chat with indie instrumentalist turned vocalist producer Marlo. Marlo shares stories of overcoming her biggest fear and how she has bounced back better than ever after 2020 quarantine. She is a Hawaiian Grammy nominated artist, a rising star in the music industry, and one of the most tenacious human beings that I know. I'm very excited to share her story with you, and I hope you enjoy.
I would like to say that I had one of the best first starts of the year of my entire life. Coming off of COVID, I have had a lot of incredible experiences in the last few months that I don't know if I would have ever gotten. I still don't know how I got those opportunities, but it's been a solid first 6 months or so. And then within the last week, it's been a little bit more difficult. Yeah. I mean, post-pandemic, Marlo, we just go on roller coaster, riding the wave, going with the flow.
And so we're definitely going to get into that as far as what you've accomplished post-pandemic and your kind of kickoff to the year. But so you're talking to me from what sounds like an empty room. What's going on over there?
Yeah. So usually I would be in my room, but I'm in a Wi-Fi lounge of the apartment complex I used to live at, and I'm currently borrowing it as I'm also borrowing the air mattress of my old roommate.
And so that's like a typical LA story right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, long story short, I've just, just been joking. You know, I mean, I feel like everyone's homeless once in LA, and that's currently my situation. Was moving apartments, had some hiccups prior to the end date of our lease. And then after thinking we locked an apartment down, the next day we got a text and the leasing agent said they gave it away, as well as a couple other properties. And so, was in a hotel in Santa Monica for a few days. And now I'm kind of back where I was, just crashing on my old roommate's floor. And yeah, we're just kind of waiting patiently that the right place will approve us.
That's such a wild thing. And so this is something I've known you for 6 years, I think. And I feel like this isn't a recurring theme because of you, but I feel like you have a lot of sudden stops once you start to gain momentum. And the one that I'm thinking of is you were a semester away from graduating from a pretty well-known music school, and then they shut down forever. Walk me through what that experience was like.
Yeah, I mean, that experience, I've said it since it happened. It's one of those things that you would never expect. Like, you hear about what you wouldn't ever expect it to happen to yourself, and then it does, and you're like, well, it's probably the most caught off guard I've ever been in my entire life. You know, the short story, I mean, I went to a really small music school, McNally Smith in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it was a semester away. It was a week before winter break. I was just waiting for one of my friend's senior recitals, and someone came up to my friend and I, and she was like, hey, so the school's closing. And we're like, haha, yeah, we're closing in 6 days because it's winter break. And she was just like stone cold, like not having it. And she was like, no, we're closing, we don't have money. And again, we were like, ha ha ha, we don't have money. And she just kind of walked away. And I remember looking at my friend and just being like, there's no way, we're not closing. It just felt off. And then we started looking around and everyone was just walking zombies, and teachers were coming by we've had better days. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is weird. And then one of the head of the vocal department came down and she hugged us. And that's when we all got the email saying that McNally Smith is closed and pretty much we can't come back. And so that was a weird moment. I remember calling my mom and not knowing what to say right away. So it was just hey, can't go back to school next semester. It's like, why? The school's closed. And I remember sending her the email, and it was a really weird time. And then just a weird week after that, because we all still went to class. We just kind of sat there and we're like, all right, this has been a solid ride. And yeah, very strange. It's still strange to this day, considering we're coming up on 4 years, like 4 years is a long time. And the fact that like, it's still just, well, I think will forever impact myself and everyone that went there or worked there is pretty crazy.
It's essentially like you go to school and it's supposed to be a safe spot, and you may have the rug pulled out from under you from people who go to the school, students, faculty, but you would never anticipate that the actual school and the entity would pull the rug out from under you.
It was, yeah, it was crazy. And I remember like, just the days leading up to what was the commencement was supposed to happen, and like, oh, we're not going to hold it. I was the peer advisor, and my incredible boss, Sue Bresny, we were like, now we're going to make this happen. Like this, there's no way we're going to let this go down completely in flames. And I remember the owners tried to come through, and we were like, nope, like this is going to be the students and the faculty and the staff's moment to close it off. And so it was really great commencement. It was sad, but it was also really like, it was just so full of life. I've never seen a commencement like that for how small. So, I mean, it was a small school, like I said, so everyone was just, it was more than a school. Like everyone was friends. Like I was friends with like this front door people, the security people, the janitors, like everyone, like we were all homies. And so to just be like, all right, bye. I don't know what like we're all going to do next. And a lot of us, yeah, we're so close to graduating. Yeah, just very strange.
Yeah, you were a semester away.
It was like three classes maybe I had to do. And yeah, I remember just walking into where I work, this student affairs office. I just like looked at my boss. I was like, I was that close to sealing it. And I wasn't able to get my bachelor's, which was a bummer, even though, you know, as much as you could try to fight it, it just, yeah, logistically, like I just couldn't. But I remember asking, I was like, can I just walk and get my associates? Like, I want to walk away with something. And they let me do that. And I just like pulled out a cap and gown from our storage area that was old. And there was like some old tassel that always sat on my desk. And like, I don't know, I always remembered looking at it like while I was working, like, oh, I'm just like getting so close to graduation. Like I was like, I don't know if it was foreshadowing or whatever it was. Like, it was just, I will forever have that tassel because that was, I don't know, just like a, I don't know, symbol of something. But yeah, and then I remember I called my mom and my dad and I was like, hey, can't make it, no biggie. I'm going to walk tomorrow. And I believe my dad had drove through the night. My mom flew in like that morning or the night before or something. And yeah, it was just them. And yeah, it was crazy.
I remember when you texted me that, and this was before Karen was a thing, but I wanted you to have the biggest Karen moment because I was pissed off for you. And I was like, how, they can't just write a piece of paper for you. Like who's going to, they're gone. They're out. Doors are closed. Just give her piece of paper and say, boom, she did it.
Yep. Yeah. No, they gave me like a copy of my transcripts and the book where my diploma was supposed to go. But they never printed diplomas, so.
They ran out of money.
They literally ran out of money. That's crazy. It's so, yeah, very strange. And like I said, to like, still see it like affect everyone and everyone, like when the day comes around, we're like, oh my gosh, like 4 years ago this happened. Like that's how much of an impact it has. And that's how like, it just insane, but like also a really beautiful experience. Cause I remember when my mom told me about McNally, I was like, a music school in Minnesota, being really ignorant to the scene out there. I was like, I mean, cause I didn't get into any of the music schools I wanted to. So I was already just in like a very like rebellious, pessimistic mood into any of those. She's like, I think you should apply. And I just called them and I was like, are you gonna let me audition with my uke? They're like, no. And I'm like, all right. And they're like, well, I mean, you could get in if you just come as a business student, which was never something that I considered. And I was like, whatever, I gotta go to college. Like everyone else got accepted. I have no clue where I'm going. And yeah, I mean, everything happens for a reason. And I wouldn't, regardless of all of what happened, I wouldn't change that part of my life because it was some of the best years of my life.
I mean, you met and collaborated with a ton of people from the school. So let's pull out some positives. And you kind of touched on it for a second, which was you wanted to audition with your uke. You are, at least how I've known you up until very recently, is a solo ukulele artist. And so you're an instrumentalist first and foremost. You've released, three or four albums at this point?
Yeah, it's like, three albums and an EP. Yeah.
Let's dive in a little bit on the ukulele world. In 2019, you were actually nominated for a Nahoku Award, which is the Hawaiian Grammys. And you were in Minnesota, or you were in Michigan? You were not in Hawaii.
I was not in Hawaii, I can tell you that. No, I think I had just, I mean, it was very, very, I just moved back to Michigan. And I found out when I was at South by Southwest, my mom was like, I got a letter. And I was like, what?
What did that mean to you? Like, tell me after that kind of roller coaster that you just described, and then you get what is the equivalent of a Hawaiian Grammy nomination, an official one, not you were on the ballot, and then they moved to the finalists. You were an actual finalist for this.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy. I mean, I'm from Michigan. I'm from the Midwest. Like, it's very like people just don't play ukulele like that. Like they do now. I mean, it's a very mainstream thing, but I mean, to come from the Midwest, which is so far from like the incredible ukulele and just culture of Hawaii, like it's kind of weird. And so to, you know, spend the last 10 years of my life like learning about it and playing and then trying to make something of it and to get to what some might consider, I mean, is the pinnacle of my career so far for sure. Like, that's a huge honor and like an incredible, like, I don't even know what to say. Cause it's like such an incredible honor to be nominated for Nahoku for Hawaiian EP of the Year. And I'm playing ukulele and I'm from Michigan and I, you know, like, it's just, it's to have that opportunity, just the opportunity to even be a finalist, even though like, I would have been honored just to be on the, you know, preliminary ballot, like just the, yeah, sorry, I'm totally like tripped up over words when I talk about it. But yeah, no, it's a huge honor. And then to be there in that moment and just to see it up there and that piece of work moments was such a, I mean, that was coming right off of the whole McNally situation. A lot of those stories were about experiences or people in Minnesota. I mean, that was a total tribute to my time there in that season of my life. And I recorded it there, and Moments is about the school closing. So to just like see it up there and close the chapter of McNally, open a new season of my life at the Nahokus, something that I could only like dream of, and see it in real time. Very crazy, very crazy moment. Very liberating and just like, because most of my career, because of feeling like a little bit of an outsider in that part of the industry, like to see that's like, oh wait, it was a little validating for me to be like, okay, I can actually do this. I do have something there, I think. And yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Like I said, when my mom got the letter when I was at South By and she called me, we were just like, is this real? Are we getting punked? Is this actual documentation? And yeah, it was a really beautiful and amazing experience and the biggest honor of my life, probably.
You're outside of Hawaii. You kind of consider yourself an outsider. I don't think that there's any ukulele virtuosos out of Minnesota, Michigan, Midwest area. How did you go about learning and progressing yourself without the culture of the genre that you chose to find yourself in?
So my dad's a musician, so I grew up playing music, and it was never something I really considered. I think I consider doing it for the rest of my life, but for me, I was just like, no, I want to do other things like directing films or what have you. And with the ukulele, that came much later into me playing instruments. I started playing guitar when I was 8. I didn't start playing ukulele until I was 14. And I remember one of my friends in middle school or something was like, hey, you should play the ukulele. And I was like, nah, that's okay. Like, I don't have to, I'm a guitar player. There's no reason, there's no need. I don't know. I was such a hater for some reason. And my dad ended up buying me one and messed around with it for a little bit, decided I didn't really care for it. I liked guitar. And then I always tell people I saw a video of Jake Shimvercuro on YouTube and it changed literally the rest of my life. You know, I was just more fascinated with it because it seemed so wild that someone could play that four-string instrument the way that he did, and, you know, Kalei and Brittany and Chris and everyone. So it blew my mind. So I really dove in and I started learning as much as I could about the history, about these players, and about that culture and that part of the music industry that's so incredibly niche. And I became obsessed. Just for me, it was just fun, and I never really saw myself being, you know, one of them or doing that as my job. I don't know. I got to college and I was like, you know, I'm in my next step, my next phase of life. What do I want to do? I obviously want to do music. I'm here for music. I want to try and make this happen. And the first step, I was like, how do I do that? And my mind went to endorsements because I essentially tried to just model a lot of things off of Jake because he was just my biggest inspiration. And I remember just looking at his album liner notes and seeing, you know, special thanks to his companies. And I was like, all right, to be a professional, I need to get endorsements is what I thought. And so that's when I started exploring every ukulele brand. Who's going to take me? At this point, I've only played ukulele for 3 or 4 years. It's something that I love to do. And whether I do it professionally or not, like, I just feel like really blessed and honored that I have the opportunity, and I've had the opportunities I've had to be a ukulele player. It just sounds so bizarre to me still, but it's pretty sweet.
So now we're going to take a hard right from there because you decided, okay, so you're in this limbo and you decide to move to LA instead of Hawaii.
Yes.
And so you moved to LA late 2019.
Yep.
And then COVID happens.
Yeah.
So again, on theme, on Marlo brand, we've started to get momentum and then something completely out of your control brings it to a screeching halt.
Yep.
Did you have flashbacks of McNally? Did you think I made the wrong move? What was going through your mind?
Yeah. I mean, that's how naturally my luck is horrible. It's like great and horrible all at the same time. Right when I'm on top, as soon as I think or say, man, it's too good to be true, it is. And then everything comes crashing down. And that's what, I mean, I moved to LA. I mean, I considered Hawaii, I considered LA, I considered a lot of places. And at the time, LA made most sense for the opportunities. And I had a lot of conversations with people in Hawaii too. And they were like, a lot of them really encouraged me to go to LA first. And so, yeah, I just figured, why not? There's opportunities there. And I know I love to seek out those opportunities. If it doesn't work, I'll move to Hawaii and try it there. If it doesn't work there, I'll continue to move till I find what works. And yeah, went to LA. First, you know, few months, it was just like learning about LA, and I mean, culture shock in itself coming from Michigan and Minnesota. The West Coast is so wild and LA is incredibly wild. Cause I mean, I'd visited LA here and there, but not to be in it and to like try to do the thing here, very, very shocking. So getting my feet under me, there was, you know, my roommate was from McNally as well and a few other friends. So, I mean, that was nice. We're kind of learning together. And just as I was comfortable and I was like, all right, this is working. Yeah, COVID hits. And it was just, I mean, we didn't know what was going to happen. So that was, I hate not knowing I just hate not knowing. And so to not know and have to kind of navigate that, and literally music went, like you said, a screeching halt. It was like, what do I do from here? So for me, I took the time to reevaluate and dive into avenues of music that I've always wanted to dive into, but just didn't have the time, or, you know, just Yeah, really, it just came down to the excuse of not having time and literally just not having time.
What does that mean, diving into avenues? What avenues are they?
I have like the utmost respect for producers because I think, I mean, for the most part, I mean, sure, you can learn how to produce all day, but like you got to have a really good ear. And anyone that has a good ear in any avenue music, I just like bow down. And producing is something like producing like instrumentals and beats outside of what I was already doing. I mean, what I was doing is I was just playing my part and then having someone else kind of help me put the pieces together. And the only hands-on portion really I was doing besides giving input on stuff was literally just me playing. I wanted to put pieces together, my own ukulele, guitar, bass, you know, little hip hop beats, whatever it is, you know. I just didn't have time, I felt like, to dive into Pro Tools or Logic or Ableton. And that's what I did. I was like, well, got all this time. We don't know what's going to happen. Let me get into Logic and see what I can do. And so I started making little cute little loops and stuff where I was like, oh, these are so cool. And I was just having fun again. I felt like for a couple years of my life, I wasn't having fun with music anymore. And to have an outlet that was music and I was learning something new and I was having fun again during a time that was so like unknown and scary, it was really nice outlet. And so that's kind of what I mean by avenues. I spent a lot of time stepping away from the ukulele and, you know, diving back into guitar, learning more about piano, learning about Logic, learning about how to be my own producer and do it all on my own. And yeah, like I said, very liberating, very exciting, and very challenging. Super challenging, super frustrating, but in a really good way. And luckily, because of McNally, I'm surrounded by incredible producers. So I spent a lot of time having conversations with them and learning from them and being challenged.
You've always been a person who creates opportunities for herself. And it's something that is not a characteristic or trait that you typically have early on in your career. When did you realize that that was a trait that you needed to hone in on?
Yeah, I think early on, very early on, that was something that I recognized because I was going to try to do what for me still sounds like the craziest thing in the world is be a professional ukulele player. I mean, growing up, like I said, I started playing guitar when I was 8, even though my dad was a musician, I did a lot of the learning on my own. I've never been one to like lessons, those types of things. I've always learned better on my own. I've been always very independent. And coming into McNally, like I said, I was, how am I going to make this happen? Obviously, no one's going to make it happen for me. You know, everyone's at the music school. Everyone's trying to do the same thing. How am I going to stand out and like actually make it work? And I just got really comfortable right away with no and getting rejected and getting denied and asking again until I make it happen. Because, I mean, we get things by asking. You know, sometimes there's things that come to us without asking for sure, but majority of our life is asking. Even if we're not like asking like a question, we do ask the universe for things. And so me too, like, you never know until you try. So why not try everything? And if some sticks, like run with it. And I think just always having that attitude and being very optimistic and very hopeful and just being a daydreamer can sometimes get me in trouble. But like, I'd rather be that. And it's, I mean, literally people will ask me all the time, they're like, how'd you get this opportunity? How'd you do this? I asked. How'd you play this festival? I emailed them and I asked and I said, and I got told no, but 2 years later, they're emailing me now, you know? So it's just like, you just have to go for it. Why wouldn't you go for it? I don't know. I say it all the time. Like, you literally have one life and it could be taken away at any moment. Why not be great? And I want to be great. And I just, yeah, it's a trait that I've had for as long as I can remember. And I want to say part of that I got from like my mom. I don't know. She's a crazy lady in the best way. She'll do and try things. And she's, I mean, always just been really encouraging. Just do it. Just ask, you know, why not?
How do you maintain those levels though? Especially being told no, how do you maintain a level of trying, striving for excellence every single day that has to be exhausting?
Oh yeah, it can definitely be exhausting. I mean, like I had a moment over quarantine where I was really down. Like 2020 was a hard year, I mean, for everyone. And I remember being so down to the point where I was like, I feel like I should just come home, like screw this. And my mom was like, no, Whit, just stay because it's gonna be worth it. And had I not stayed, I would have not have had the stellar first half of 2021 that I've had. But I don't know. It's exhausting. I mean, everyone has days, and that's something that I've really been trying to sit with myself with, is like, because before I would beat myself up for having days where I would be unproductive or I wouldn't feel inspired or I got a bunch of no's, you know, it's exhausting. And like I said, I beat myself up, and I've just been telling myself, like, it's okay to be told no. It's okay to have unproductive days, and it's okay. You know, I don't need to be on 10 all the time, and because otherwise I'll burn myself out. And that's what I had gotten to a point in Minnesota where I burnt myself out, and I wasn't the best version of myself there. And like I said, the 2 years where I was really disconnected from music was a chance for me to like get reconnected with myself, my purpose, and like fuel myself back up. And yeah, that's just, I've been, ever since I've settled with that and have just become more relaxed, it's helped me maintain those levels more consistently. And I've been, for me, I feel like I've been at the top of my game recently. So even with everything that's happening right now, I think of life as a book. I think our story is already written out for us in a way. And, you know, sometimes we've got to reread pages over. Why would we want to jump ahead in a story? You know, like we just have to follow line by line, and everything happens for a reason. So if I get told no, I just try to remind myself it might be just a no now, but it can be a yes later, or it just wasn't meant to be for me. And that the reason why will make itself apparent very soon.
Post quarantine though, you came out with what was your alternate ego? Tell me about Yellow.
Yellow. Yeah. Yellow. I owe it to quarantine. And like I said, trying to find ways to challenge myself musically in ways that I haven't explored or avoided. And Yellow is, I don't know, alter ego. I still don't know what Yellow is yet. But how it came to be, it's me singing, which is not a thing. For the 6 years I've known you, I'm not saying I've avoided singing. I've avoided singing since I was 3 years old. So, 21 years of just avoiding it. For who knows what, I got scarred singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer at some preschool event, which I thought I was going to do. And I remember I was talking to my mom about it a few weeks ago, and she's like, yeah, I remember your teacher coming up to me and being like, Marlo wants to sing Rudolph at the Christmas concert. She was like, what? Really? And she's like, yeah. And so that teacher, I can't remember her name. I guess I don't remember this at all, but we worked on it. But I do remember being there in the moment and being petrified. And after that, I was not caught dead singing. Would not sing in front of people. If people caught me singing, it was like instant zip my lips. People ask me to sing. My dad has always wanted me to sing. Even my brother's like, come on, sing. Like everyone, no, not going to happen. I was so like on board of not singing that I really thought I was never going to sing publicly for the rest of my entire life, that I was going to take that to my grave. So,
but then you end up singing.
Yeah. And then okay, I end up singing.
Let me just fast track for yeah. everybody is that you end up singing, and not only do you end up singing, you release a single, you promo it out, you tease everyone. So it went from I sing and then I get caught and I stop to guys, I have something for you. You're going to have to download it. And it's up on Spotify. I mean, it's up on Apple. It's up on Spotify. And you did photo shoots for it. You created a brand for it.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. It all started with the song. It was like 1 or 2 in the morning of one random night in like September or something. And I was spiraling, and I was just, again, I was been getting into producing, and I was playing a lot of guitar and kind of came up with this loop, recorded it. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, push, come to shove. I had some other drum loops and all that. And I start writing lyrics, which never happens. Or it happened just years ago and I stopped, and I don't know. The hook, I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Showed it to my roommate, and he was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And I was like, this is a big deal for me. I don't show people me singing. And then I didn't think I was going to do anything. Fast forward, from the few people that I showed, they're like, yeah, you should actually release this. And I felt like I should have also released it too, which, again, not a feeling that I'd ever have. And I think why I had it is because I liked it. I actually liked what I did and I was proud of it. And I wanted to share it because just purely because I liked it. And it made me feel something. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to do this. And I did the photo shoot, and I had those photos for months before I actually posted, because I still didn't know if I was going to post it. I didn't know I was going to post it till the moment I actually posted it. And I got the fits. I knew I wanted it to be yellow. Yellow was just originally my producer tag. And I was like, what am I going to release the song over? I don't want it to be Marlo. I want it to be something else, totally separate. And so I was like, well, why don't I just use yellow? So yeah, created the brand, went through what the font was going to be, the color yellow. I got the fit. My roommate was curling my hair. She's like, what is this for? I was like, I don't know, you'll have to find out. She's like, I'm your roommate. And I was like, yeah, my mom doesn't even know. So like, this is a secret. And my buddy,
you were all in though. You had,
I was all in.
You had every intention of releasing it. So you hadn't admitted it to yourself or publicly, but it sounds like you had every intention of releasing it. Was it fear that stopped you, or was it something else?
The biggest fear of my life was to sing publicly. And I knew if I was going to do it, because I was surrounded by all my friends are crazy vocalists. I've always felt insecure about that in a way, because singing is something I've always wanted to do. But I just, for me, I never thought my voice would be strong enough to stand up against that. I can sometimes think in a competitive mindset, which is horrible for music. But yeah, it's something I always felt insecure about. Because I liked how my vocals sounded on Cycles and just the whole song in general, I knew the song has to be, for me, perfect in my eyes, but it also needs to be backed up. I need to build this up because no one's going to expect it. Because I'm always thinking about marketing and branding. And if I'm going to do it, if I'm going to face my biggest fear, I have to go all out. That's how for me to do it, I had to go all out.
Yeah, you're going to the high school dance and you're getting an LA 10 treatment before you go. You're not going to kind of half it and show up and then be like, oh, that was lame. I told you, you really do go all in.
Yeah. And I'm going to go all in because like I look at my life like a book and like chapters, and this was like the chapter that I was fearing for, that I felt like was going to come one day, but I kept avoiding it. And yeah, again, just face it head on. I felt like I had to really just give it my all. And again, I liked it and I always want to have fun with the stuff I do and I want to build it up. And I knew no one was going to expect it. So I was like, well, why don't I just start posting cryptic photos of me in this all kind of yellow theme and just tell people I got something coming that they, but, and to hear them try to guess what it is and no one have really a clue. People that are like, how are you going to sing? And then they're like, nah, like there's no way I'll do that. And I'd see those very few comments and I was like, that's actually what's going to happen. And so, yeah, I showed the song only to a select handful of people before I did it. Cause obviously I wasn't going to completely just hold it to myself. Cause I told them when I sent it to them, I said, please tell me if this, if I'm making a fool of myself, if I, should I post this or no, like be completely honest with me, because if it goes bad, I'm like, that's going to, it's going to crush me because it's such a big fear of mine. And they were all like, I mean, it was the people I, you know, obviously you and my mom, unfortunately, didn't make the cut there. But, you know, other than that, for the most part, they were all people that like I trusted were going to tell me if it was going to be a no. So it was like, it was Taylor, it was Jake and my friend Kyle and my roommate and just a few other people too. My friend Noah, I showed him the night before. I was like, I'm going to post this thing. And he's a really good singer. I was like, tell me now. And he was like, this is you. But like, holy crap, this is you. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm spiraling and I'm just going to face my biggest fear tomorrow. And it was scary.
So what does it feel like to post something like that? And then I guess, do you feel liberated from it? Are you going to release more of it? Is it something you're going to chase down? Or is it something that was, hey, I did this. I know I can do it, but I'm going to continue down the path that I've already set down.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is really liberating and freeing. I feel like I'm so much lighter because that's something that I have so held in literally. I mean, I went to music school. You'd think I'd let it out there. No, like it was a very scary thing. So I feel so relieved. And I just like more than anything feel really proud of myself because I was proud of it before people even knew what it was. And that's why I posted it, is because at the end of the day, no matter if it was bad and people, you know, say they trashed on it, at the end of the day, I don't care because like it was something that I liked and I felt proud of and it was me singing. And for me to even post that was a big deal. So I'm fine with that. And I don't know, it was fun. I felt like I've really halted a little bit of my ukulele stuff because I wasn't feeling challenged and I was just not, for some reason, I felt very disconnected from it. So this through Yellow has taught me a lot about Marlo and like my ukulele stuff. And it actually got me more excited to release my next Marlo project. So, and also to like take my time with my music. I feel like a lot of my Marlo stuff for the most part has had moments of it being rushed and not the best it could be. And with Cycles, I mean, out of fear, I took my time, but I also took my time because I was like, this has to be perfect. And or for me, my standards are perfect. And yeah, it's taught me that I can take my time and I don't have to tell people about what's, you know, what I'm working on and it's going to be great. And just wait till I'm fully satisfied and proud of the work that I'm doing. So it's taught me a lot. It's inspired a lot of just my own new ukulele music that's going to come out. I think it's going to be completely different than Moments and things that I put out before. It won't be me singing on it. I'm going to keep that separate for now. Who knows if those two worlds collide. But yeah, I mean, I think with Yellow, I'm not going to rush it. I'm not going to, because people like Cycles, I'm not going to try to start pushing out songs just to push out songs. Like if I'm going to do it again, I want to be great. I want it to be great. And so, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's stuff in the works. There will be more. Will there be more after this? I don't know. I just, the thing that I'm working on right now, I like and I'm proud of and I want to share. And it'll come very soon. So yeah, I'm excited for it. So I'm just taking my time. It's a fun thing for me. It's me learning about myself and getting over my fears and just challenging myself and creating music that I really like.
It has to be is super empowering for you, just from the creative standpoint. And so knowing, let's just take a time machine back, knowing that this was your journey. This is where you have arrived at so far. What would you tell the little 14-year-old Marlo? What sort of piece of advice would you give? Would you give your former self 10 years ago?
Just trust the process. Like I said, there's 2 years where I was like kind of done and capped on music, which is like my favorite thing ever. So to be done with it, I was at a very low point. Just like hold on and trust that things are going to take off when they're supposed to. Because there was that 2 years and then moments over quarantine where I was like, all right, towels in. Like I'm done with it. I've done everything I can do. And it's just hold on. And like everything happens for a reason. I think that's the biggest thing that currently, presently, right now in this direct moment, I'm reminding myself multiple times a day, everything happens for a reason. And just to continue to be great. And it is what it is. Like, I feel like people can look at it is what it is as a really pessimistic viewpoint. I look at it as very optimistic. It is what it is. And we work with what we got, you know?
100% agree with you on that. And I think that everything that you have done so far, you've definitely overcome challenges. I've, like you said, I've known you for 6 years now, and I've watched the ups, I've watched the downs, the moments that are worth crying over later on in life and are no longer worth crying over because you find yourself, while not on the exact path that you thought, you still find yourself in a destination that you're happy with.
Yeah. And I think another couple of things that I would probably tell myself is like, trust myself, which I'm always good about trusting myself and my gut. But I felt like there's been moments in my life where I felt like I couldn't trust myself, and just like continue to, I think everyone, I mean, who's a better person to trust than literally yourself? And continue to be open to learning. I am so independent, which is great, but again, can get me in trouble because sometimes I'm not open to learning, you know, from others or collaborating. And I've really allowed myself to lean into learning more and being open to it and learning from others. And yeah, it's just been like the last couple of years have been really personal growth and my approach just to better my workflow and my drive. Just hold on.
I think that is the perfect spot to end. And so, Marlo, thank you so much for taking some time. I know that you will absolutely bounce back on your feet. I know you have a trip coming up, and I bet that everything is going to look completely different once you return back to LA. I hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Artist Development Podcast. You can follow Marlo on Instagram at marlo.offic. You can support the show by subscribing on your favorite platform and following us on Instagram at artist.dev.